calling me Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
You're on, Larry.
Expert. That's a word that's plenty stretchy, huh? What makes somebody an expert at anything? We pay for expertise, don't we? But how often do we get it? I had a very valuable lesson in what makes an expert. I was only, 19 or 20 at the time, but that experience stuck with me, helped shape the way I make decisions ever since. I recall it vividly. And I'll circle back to it in a little bit. You might find something there for you. But first, when you think about who or who not to trust, we tend to think of people close to us, right? Girlfriends or wives or business associates or partners. People we know and can evaluate from personal experience. But what about those famous experts? The ones with advanced diplomas or certifications in their profession, or maybe a list of glowing testimonials from their thoroughly delighted clients. People raved about Bernie Madoff. Doctors whose negligence kills multiple people. Those guys always find a few patients to say nice about them at their trials, don't they? You can read 100 Amazon reviews that say some product is shit, but there are often as many that give it 5 stars. We put our trust in unknowns all the time, even though that trust is predicated on the opinions of strangers. And the recommendations of friends often let us down. People let all kinds of irrelevant shit cloud and color their appraisal of a given expert. A friend of mine sent me to some chick barber, said she gave the greatest haircut ever. What she had was great tits and an ass you could crack eggs on. But sadly, I left her salon wearing the Jim Carrey Dumb and Dumber hairstyle. How often must we put more than our trust, maybe our faith, even our lives, in the hands of a total stranger? We do it every time we get on a plane or a train or anything from a ferry boat to a cruise ship. It's most extreme for the military, I guess. Layers and layers of that chain of command with plenty of morons way up there. Guys with oak leaf clusters and shoulder brushes who have written a shit battle plan or misread somebody else's. And how many of those white stone crosses in all those cemeteries were a result of those so-called experts. I recently lost someone close because some jackhole fuckball head-up-ass doctor misdiagnosed him for 4 goddamn years. That's right, 48 months over 200 weeks of lost time. And if that nitwit doctor had gotten it right even 2 years in, well, my friend would still be my friend instead of somebody I'll have to catch up with on the other side. I saw a story in the Atlantic Monthly with the tortured title of The Peculiar Blindness of Experts. The gist of the article is that we are constantly misled by so-called experts. Scientific experts, business experts, investment experts, medical experts, diet experts, fitness, marketing, engineering, it goes on. We are drowning in bullshit, but many of us have some pretty sensitive bullshit detectors, right? And most of our detectors probably use the same filtration system. If it's anything from a politician, label it bullshit. The media, bullshit. Academia, bullshit. Government, bullshit. So what constitutes an expert at anything? Some things require proficiency tests for licensing and so on, right? Law, medicine. But still, who among us hasn't known a stupid attorney or doctor? Plenty of guys sitting in jail cells can tell you all about expert attorneys that turned out not to be. Lots of amputees out there missing the wrong leg. When I was about 19, a stupid and negligent dentist damn near killed me. His wall was covered with diplomas. You can hear that story in episode 11, How Larry Cheated Death. It's at thatlarryshow.com in the February 2017 tab. What happens when we find ourselves at the mercy of some so-called expert and discover too late that he or she is an incompetent imbecile? Lately, people are so enamored of technology, they even say the word as if it has some magical or holy connotation. That always makes me laugh. Often they preface technology with a qualifying phrase to pump it up, 21st century technology, state-of-the-art technology, cutting-edge technology. As if, somehow, technology will fix everything. But those who imbue technology with that halo of divinity, they still get sick and die, don't they? They still get crushed in high-tech cars and electrocuted in high-tech homes and crash in high-tech aircraft. If there are aliens on Earth, they must laugh at our technology as we would laugh at some toddler pretending his dinner plate is the steering wheel of a Ferrari. But as much as technology advances, stuff that should be stupid simple still goes wrong. Toaster ovens fritz out, and transmissions fail, and the paint on your house fades and cracks, and even copper pipes get holes in them. And let's see now, toasters and transmissions, well, those are 20th century technology, and copper pipes, that's 25th century technology, BC. Yeah, the pharaohs had copper plumbing. You'd think after 5,000 years, somebody would have perfected it. They've been building cars for way more than a century. Billions of them. And plenty of those are still lemons. How can that be? One of my favorite rides was this big-ass Ford. And after a while, the damn thing would just quit. Like at 60 miles an hour on the Long Island Expressway. I'd be tooling along, digging on some tunes, and without any warning whatsoever, the motor would just stop. Usually shit like that happens on startup, not when you've been on the road for a while. So I'd throw it in neutral as it coasted and try to crank the son of a bitch again, and usually it would start. But it's not a good feeling when people are on your ass at speeds fast enough to kill you. And so began a detective job. The tank was full. Maybe some gunk was clogging the line, so I changed the gas filter. Then I checked all the wires and plugs. All good. Thermostat, good. And pretty soon, I was at the end of my automotive expertise. There's that stupid word again. There should be absolutely no measure of degrees of expert. One either is or is not. That's something that drives me nuts about our culture. People like to claim status in so many fields, and they're just so full of shit. The three-chord Johnny who calls himself a musician. Only the guy who pays his rent playing his instrument should be allowed to call himself a musician. The rest are just guitar players. Doctor is another one. People put doctor in front of their names and demand to be called Dr. So-and-so. And then you find out their doctorate is in social science or philosophy or pre-Columbian art. That's some horseshit right there. If somebody gutted it out through med school and is a physician, that's a doctor. The others are not. But back to the detective work on my fucked up Ford. I went to multiple experts. The first one was at the local Shell station. Full auto service said the channel letters over the garage that held three or four bays. They'd do anything from a fan belt to a ring job. He had snappy white coveralls and said it needed a valve job, which was complete bullshit. Not one valve was tapping, not even a little. Besides, the mill had less than 50 grand on it. Next stop was a shiny Exxon station. They had racks of tires and batteries and a big sign that said, Computer Diagnostics. Red metal boxes on casters with gauges and sensors and digital readouts, Rudy Toot Toot. And that guy, who also had some stylish coveralls, though not as neat as the shell guy, he said it was an ignition problem, which I could not rule out. But he gave me an outrageous estimate for running down the problem with no guarantee of success. I tried a place called Peerless Automotive Service. That grease monkey said I needed a complete engine overhaul. I laughed and told him the motor had less than 50,000 on it, and he said, yeah, but it's a Ford, isn't it? He had a point, but he was still full of shit. In desperation, I took it to a Ford dealership. I knew they'd try to bend me over the pommel horse, and sure enough, they won the expert blue ribbon. They separated me from my car, had me wait in a neat little lounge with designer coffee and mini donuts. With a straight face, the service manager, who wore no coveralls but a short-sleeved shirt and a necktie that could trigger an epileptic seizure, he told me his technicians. That word always pisses me off. They're fucking mechanics. All technician means is double the hourly rate. That asshole told me I needed a new engine, which would have cost more than the value of the car. So, I kept driving the damn thing as I tried to figure out what the hell to do. And it kept stalling and stalling. Once it stalled as I was making a left turn on Queens Boulevard. If you've never been, Queens Boulevard is one wide-ass thoroughfare. I think there are maybe a dozen lanes with two traffic islands. And I very narrowly missed getting T-boned by a tractor trailer. This fucking car was going to break me, or kill me. As luck would have it, some kid I went to school with heard me bitching about the car and said I just had to take it to his cousin, Richie. He claimed Richie could fix anything, and cheap. Where was Richie? He operated out of a corrugated metal stall over in Willets Point. Willets Point is a shitty section of Queens near the stadium where the Mets play. The place was a huge warren of acres and acres of junkyards, body shops, upholsters, anything that had anything to do with automobile salvage or repair. There were hundreds of them. It was like something out of, Mad Max or the Third World. And indeed, many of the merchants there were from Cuba and other points around the globe. The Cuban angle was a hell of an endorsement. Those guys down there had kept cars from the 50s running forever. They had fantastic ingenuity. At Willets Point, there were no written estimates, no warranties, no waiting areas. Well, that's not exactly correct. If you wanted to wait in the mud and slush as they worked on your car, you were welcome to. There were no licenses, no addresses. I suppose they paid rent to somebody for the space they worked in. I don't recall ever seeing a hydraulic lift. Guys would put cars on jack stands and slide under, usually on folded refrigerator boxes. Wheeled creepers don't work so good on dirt floors. So one Saturday, I drove over in the Ford and somehow found Richie. He probably wasn't much older than I, but he looked a lot more. Hard years will really age a face. His hands had a depth of grime ground into them that no bar of lava soap would ever remove. I started to tell Richie what was going on with the car, but he just slid behind the wheel and cranked it, and then he listened as he revved the motor.
Give me a couple hours.
I looked at him, wondering if I had made a mistake. After all, certified mechanics and technicians with Exxon and Shell and Peerless and Ford logos on their coveralls had all taken their turn and declared my car was majorly fucked. Not to mention, they had big heated bays with gleaming hydraulic lifts and toolboxes the size of teardrop trailers, and those metal clipboards that are also hinged boxes with written estimates and 30-day warranties. Those guys put plastic over your seats and paper floor mats so they wouldn't mess up the pristine interior of your rig. Oh, they all looked so professional and expert. I figured I had little to lose with Richie. The car had almost killed me once already. So, I asked him if there was someplace nearby to get some food. He stepped out of the car and dragged a grimy sleeve across his nose, which left a visible snot trail. It was February in New York, and the cold was bone-chilling. Richie jerked his head down the mud road and said,
"Go down to the corner. Make a left about a quarter mile on the right's a luncheonette. It's a dive, but it won't kill you."
I started walking toward what I hoped would be warmth and sustenance. I'd been to Willets Point a few times before with my old man. He was always a big DIY guy. I flashed on one particular memory when we spent an afternoon searching for a new seat for his beloved Robin's Egg Blue Ford. I described that adventure in episode 35. It's in the July 2017 archive. My dad was still very much alive then, and knowing how much he enjoyed this place, I felt a little sad and guilty not having invited him along on this excursion. The dirt road was rutted like a battlefield. Decades of zero maintenance and heavy vehicles had etched deep grooves and craters in it, which were now thick with ice. Much of it had a psychedelic rainbow color because the earth was so soaked with motor oil. Here was beauty, even in a toxic dump. Everywhere underfoot were chunks of automotive glass, rusty lug nuts, body bolts, hunks of leaf springs, flattened hose clamps, crushed distributor caps, spark plugs, muffler hangers, the detritus of millions of miles of vacations, days at the beach, commutes to the office, stops at the supermarket, whatever. Chain-link fencing topped by clouds of razor wire flanked the road. On those fences were crude wooden signs, some hand-painted in carnival colors, silent yet loudly hawking whatever skills were offered. Mufflers, brakes, front-end collision, electrical tune-ups, tires, wheels. No matter what words were on the signs, the fonts and styles looked like they said blammo and kerpow. The fences were festooned with hubcaps, hung like battle shields on some apocalyptic fortress. I'll post a few pictures on the show page, and you can see for yourself. I made the left turn, and after a few hundred yards, some permanent buildings began to sandwich the mechanic stalls. They were a little more substantial businesses that supplied the rest. Machine shops and metal fabricators and plating guys who would re-chrome a pitted bumper or door handle. Here there was a sidewalk, and the road morphed from mud to ancient cobblestones. I squinted into the wind and saw a faded sign swinging above a brick storefront. It said, "Luncheonette," in that Coca-Cola kind of typeface. And there's a word you don't see much anymore, the diminutive "et," huh? Kitchenette, dinette, laundrette, novelette. What does luncheonette mean exactly? A small place or petite portions? I was about to find out. The windows were completely fogged, so at least I knew it was warm inside. I opened the door. There was a counter with four round stools covered in fiesta-colored vinyl, all cracked and peeling. There were two tables for four. Total seating capacity? A dozen. Smoke was rising off a griddle where a meaty old guy in a greasy apron worked it with a scraper. It wasn't quite lunchtime at the luncheonette. Some dude in a hard hat sat at a table reading the paper. He was the only other customer. The grill man turned around and jerked one of his chins at me. I said, "Cheeseburger, fries, Coke." He tossed a patty on the grill. Then he stuck his paw in a sack of French fries and dropped a couple fistfuls into a deep-fry basket. Next, he submerged that basket into hot oil that probably hadn't been changed since the vinyl on the stools was shiny and new. The hard hat seat raked across the linoleum floor. When he opened the door, the Arctic wind shrieked in off of Flushing Bay, which could be seen in the distance. Flushing Bay wasn't so much a bay as a tributary of the East River, on the other side of which was another garden spot, the Bronx. What they really were was where Long Island Sound dead-ended. To think, not too many miles east of where I sat, was some of the priciest real estate on the planet, aptly named the Gold Coast, the setting for the Great Gatsby, Kings Point and Sands Point, where hedge fund guys lived in places that made Beverly Hills look like low-income housing. And here I was in a luncheonette in Willits Point. Pretty soon, the cook put a burger, fries, and a Coke in front of me. I knew I had some time to kill. The stool was an ass punisher, so I migrated to a table where there was a copy of the New York Post, yesterday's edition. I settled in and read as I ate, and the food was surprisingly good. After a while, the place began to fill up with a lunch crowd, and the cook was giving me the stink eye. A waitress had materialized. Her look was consistent with the rest of the joint. There was nothing et about her. She was full luncheon, with sides and seconds and desserts. I paid the bill and left. Outside, the winter sun was a good way past its zenith. The shadows were longer. The wind seemed colder. It was getting overcast. On my way back to Richie's cubby, I didn't bother to take in any of the surroundings. I just wanted my car fixed, and I wanted to go home. The Ford was parked in front. When Richie saw me, he said,
"Intake manifold gasket, $1.25, cash."
I paid him, wondering if I had just pissed away 2 hours and $125. The car never stalled again. I had learned all about fake experts and how real expertise can come from a place that might surprise you. It was a cheap lesson. I never did get to take my old man back to Willits Point. That was another lesson learned, and a lot more costly. A few years back, those hundreds of tiny businesses of Willits Point, which some call the Iron Triangle, those were demolished for grand plans of affordable housing and a mall. Because what the world needs is some more fucking Costcos and Starbucks and Bed Bath & Beyonds and CVS's, because they add so much variety and texture and character to our lives. As one writer said, Willits Point was a dirty, loud, vibrant mess. Exactly the kind of place that New York was once famous for. Not anymore. Soon it will be safe and tame and look and feel and smell no different than any other cluster of corporate shit. But as of now, the politicos and builders and scumbags that run New York are still fighting each other over who gets and does what. I hope they never make peace. Better off as acres and acres of oil-soaked mud. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. If you like what you just heard, there's a lot more at thatlarryshow.com. While there, click any subscribe button, Android, Apple, Stitcher, whatever, so you never miss an episode. If you download through Apple, why not give us a nice 5-star review? Kind of helps the show grow. If you really like what you heard, click that Patreon button and unlock dozens of bonus episodes. That's where we often get a lot more up close and personal. And so, my friends, whatever dilemma you face or mystery you need to solve, remember, the only expert that really is an expert is the one that helps you. The trappings don't mean much at all. I'll see you this weekend for Sinner Sunday, and until then, take no shit.